Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Darrell Holtkamp. He's a veterinarian and associate professor at Iowa State University. Darrell, thank you for joining us.
Good to be here, Joe.
Now, back in 2011, you came out with a report saying that PRRS was costing the pork industry about $664 million. That's a lot of money.
Yeah, it is, about $1.8 million a day.
Are we making progress on that number?
Well, it looks like we may be. The National Pork Board decided that one of their objectives was to reduce the cost of PRRS by 20% by the year 2020. And so subsequently, they asked if we would update those estimates. And so we did do that for them. We're now doing that on a every six month basis. And the last one we did was in October of 2016. And so for that estimate, we came up with a number around $580 million. So an improvement from the $664 million that was done in 2010.
So this has been adjusted for hog prices and...
That's right. What we're calling the cost of PRRS is really the value of lost productivity. And so what we did is we looked at the factors that go into that. And we came up with four factors, including the distribution of herds in PRRS affected or unaffected herds. And then the productivity differences between herds that are affected by PRRS and those aren't. And those are the two things that veterinarians and producers can control directly. And there's two other factors, though, that they really don't have direct control over that affect the value of that lost productivity, and those are the prices, including the prices of market hogs, wean pig prices, price of feed, and so forth. And then the other one is the size of the national herd. So that's kind of just a multiplier, right? The more animals you have, the more herds you have, the bigger is the value of lost productivity for the U.S. And so those two factors we recognize that producers don't have a direct impact on, and so we adjusted for those when we came up with that $580 million figure.
Now, whether you're talking $664 million or $580 million, that's more money than most producers could ever relate to. Can we bring it down to almost like on a per pig basis, or can a producer look at that number and say, well, yeah, that's about right. This is consistent with what PRRS is costing me.
You know, we market kill about 110 million pigs in the U.S. every year. And so if you take that $580 million, that's roughly around $5 a pig for every pig in the U.S. So it's a big number. It affects our competitiveness globally, no doubt. It's big enough to do that. It's a number that needs to come down.
How do you isolate it, though? Because when PRRS is in a herd, it's rarely acting alone. You've got mycoplasma and PCV. How can you with confidence look at that and say PRRS caused this specific loss?
Yeah, that's something we struggle with. And it's PRRS, the nice thing about PRRS, what makes our job a little bit easier about it is when you do have PRRS outbreaks and when PRRS is affecting a sow herd and a group of growing pigs, it has a very dominating effect, right? It's a big part of the losses, and so when we look at it, we look at a large number of data from a large number of herds, large number of groups of pigs, and so what you're hoping to do is that those other confounders that you have in there, other disease statuses, other management factors, and so forth, are averaging out, right? So you hope you have enough in the affected and the unaffected that they sort of balance out. It's not perfect. It's probably closer to hand grenades than darts, but it's the best you can do. I would say one thing we did for this October update, the October 2016 update, was we did account for PED. And so, again, that had such a dominant effect on productivity for herds that were affected by PED that we did try to adjust for that specifically in this October update. Of course, in the 2010 study, we didn't have to worry about it because it wasn't there yet.
But. So PED was not part of that 580, you can look at the 580 and say, yeah, this was
that was adjusted
PRRS.
for PD,
yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Now, when you look at those numbers, you're making progress, but I mean, that's an accountant could look at that and say, yeah, you know, you've improved by, you know, $80 million or so. What does it tell you, though, as a veterinarian? I mean, we're making progress, but where specifically are we making progress?
Yeah. Some of the things that are contributing to that lower number we're seeing now is, one, the incidence of PRRS outbreaks has gone down in sow herds. Prior to, really, 2013 seems to be kind of a cutoff here, right? And you probably remember that was the year PED was introduced in the U.S. Before that, outbreaks tended to occur at about a rate of 30 to 40% of breeding herds per year. Since then, it's run closer to 20 to 30 range. And so we've seen a downward shift in the incidence of PRRS outbreaks in breeding herds. And I think that's real. I wasn't sure if it was going to be sustainable, but it appears that it will be. I think what happened there was producers have made an intentional effort to improve their biosecurity. I think what PED taught them was that they can actually make a difference with good biosecurity, and that it does work. And I think that has led to the situation we have today, where they're sustaining that higher level of biosecurity than we had before. So that's probably, if I had to rank them, that would probably be the number one thing that's driving this lower cost or value of productivity we're seeing, productivity losses due to PRRS. The other big factor we saw was in the productivity data. And the way we do break down the herds that we consider to be affected by PRRS, the breeding herds affected by PRRS, a little bit. And one of the categories we have is herds that are still positive, and we call them either positive stable or positive unstable. They're basically positive with PRRS, but they have not had an outbreak for the last 12 months. And in the 2010 study, the value of the lost productivity in those herds was about $50 per sow per year. And so even though they hadn't had an outbreak in a year, there were still some losses. PRRS was still doing some damage. Now that's gone down to almost nothing, right? Those herds almost do as well as herds that are either negative or in the ASV terminology, provisional negative, but basically herds that are unaffected by PRRS. And so that was a big shift we saw as well. So we think that's maybe related to how producers and veterinarians are managing those sow herds, doing probably a better job of managing the immunity in those herds. Better job of managing transmission of virus within those herds, and able to maybe stabilize them faster than they used to be. The other one I think is a factor is there's a considerably less live virus inoculation going on now than there was back during the 2010 study. I think that allowed us, for the people that still use it, it allows them to stabilize farms quicker and wean negative pigs, but I think there's a production consequence to that. I think that's what the data's telling us. And so we're using a lot less live virus inoculation today, and I think that's showing up in the data that we see.
And you mentioned managing immunity and using less live virus in the herds, but what have we learned about vaccinating both the breeding herd and also grower finishers? We're apparently doing that more effectively, judging from your numbers. What are we doing better?
Again, recognizing, and this was one of the things we looked at in the 2010 study, is that the Pork Board asked us specifically to address the question of, in herds that are relatively naive, and when they have an outbreak compared to herds that are already positive and have an outbreak, is there a production difference in there, right? Logically, you'd say, well, these naive herds or relatively naive herds don't have very much immunity, and so the production losses might be greater compared to those that have some immunity, whether by vaccine, live virus, or just natural exposure, right? So we looked at that specifically, and indeed, there was a big difference, about 2.5 pigs per sow per year, right? So I think that has led producers, I think, or veterinarians as well, probably to opt for control rather than elimination. So they're continuing to expose gilts before they come in to either live virus or vaccine virus, and then trying to maintain a level of immunity in the sow herd as well with vaccine virus rather than live virus, but with some vaccine virus to keep that immunity as high as possible. And then we also recognized, I think, and this kind of coincided with the end of the 2010 study where people were saying, well, we're weaning these negative pigs, but when we track them, we find a lot of those groups of pigs become positive for PRRS before they get to marketing, and recognizing that there's a loss that comes along with that. And so a lot of people said, well, let's try to vaccinate those negative pigs, negative weaning, go ahead and vaccinate them. In the event that they do have an introduction of virus, we'll get some better production from them. And I think the studies that have been done bear that out, and so that's pretty common today that people are doing that. And I think we probably are seeing some benefit to that in the growing pigs, and some benefit in the sow herd in terms of some better reproductive performance than we had before with other approaches.
And it's great that we're making progress against PRRS. What have we learned from this experience that maybe we can apply to other diseases?
Well, yeah, that's, you know, I think PRRS has taught us a lot. I think it taught us, for one thing, how to think about this, right? And so now we think in terms, when we have an outbreak, we think in terms immediately of trying to stabilize that farm, get the virus to die out, and then we can wean a negative pig. And that you know, has become the goal of control, right? Well, it was PRRS that was sort of the reason that idea developed. The other alternative is to try to eliminate the virus, and we know we can do that with PRRS as well. The interesting thing is, you know, when PED hit, that those same concepts really carried over to PED, right? And so I think we were, in some regards, our experience with PRRS prepared us to deal with PED, even though I would say our success with PED is probably more than has been with PRRS. But, I think we can do that. Almost everything we do in the name of biosecurity before PED was done for PRRS, right? And so I think a lot of the improvements there, now again, with PED, that kind of took us to another level, but now we're maintaining that high level because of PRRS again, right? And so I think PRRS is forcing us to learn, forcing us to do some things that are probably good, very good production practices that we wouldn't do otherwise. But I would be remiss not to point out, though, that PRRS has, well, there's been more than once we thought we had PRRS figured out and thought we were making progress. And the virus just has an uncanny way of making us look foolish every time. And so even though it appears as if we're making progress now, I really do think we are learning more every day. And yes, at the moment it appears we're making progress. But I'm always cautiously optimistic about PRRS. But it really is just a very smart virus. It really has a way of surviving where unlike any other pathogen we've ever dealt with in